Hello and welcome to National League Town, Mets fandom, Mets history, Mets life, with Long Island's own Greg Prince and Jeff Heisen. Hey, Greg.
Bonjour, Jeff.
On today's show, we talk about the Mets of a fashion, and we bring back a beloved segment of our show. But first, Saturday's game was on Fox, so because it's a national broadcast, they had one of those corny graphics, graphics that can always be better served by just talking about them, but they had to have a graphic. And this graphic had Mr. Met on a roller coaster because it was emblematic of the current Met season. Some losses there at the beginning, and then up and down, up and down. We get it. After yesterday's win, the Mets are one game above 500, which seems appropriate. Yes, it has been a roller coaster, but this is, at least for now, a 500 team. So they'll edge above, edge below, at least until the trade deadline, and we'll see what happens from there. So, Greg, this is the Mets. This is the 2024 Mets.
Well, for the first 27 games, this is the 2024 Mets. What they'll be from the 28th game forward, to use the hoariest of cliches, remains to be seen. I don't think we have a spectacular, reliable handle on who these Mets are other than their record. I think I'd buy a little more into the idea that, well, this is a 500 club, give or take a game. If this was the kind of team that were like won two games, lost two games, but we've seen this team lose five games in a row. We've seen this team win six games in a row. We saw them between L.A., San Francisco, and coming home to play St. Louis, lose, what was it, five out of six, I think. So they seem to be a moody type of team, if you want to describe their play that way, an inconsistent type of team. Most aspects of their skill sets seem to be inconsistent. The hitting is sometimes great, and sometimes it's really not. The pitching has been kind of smooth, except when it isn't. The relief feels like it's an asset, except those days where it's in the toilet. And the fielding, there are parts of it that make you, you know, stand up and cheer, and parts of it that make you turn away and cringe. So there's something about this team that has yet to find its form, and I suppose that adds up to a 500 team. Being fans, we are striving on their behalf to get the good parts more regular and the bad parts, obviously, less regular. That is a wish I suppose fans everywhere have. Happily, for our purposes of trying to put them in a box, 27 games is exactly 1/6 of a season. So you can extrapolate, multiply by six, the 14-13 record. You have 84-78, which is not just mathematics. It's also a signal from what we remember about last year in the National League, which was, oh, it only took 84 games to get into the playoffs. That was the Marlins. That was the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks took those 84 wins and cashed it in a couple of times, and it became a World Series ticket. I think throughout the offseason, we were sort of thinking, if this team can just win 84 or so games, it's in pretty good shape. And after last year, 84 games would be a definitive improvement. I don't know how that's going to work as the rest of the season goes by. So far, we've seen the Dodgers, we've seen the Dodgers and the Braves for ourselves, and we've seen the Dodgers look very human, and yet there they are already kind of running away with the West, many games to go. The Braves, who the Mets also played very well, seem to have gotten their act together, and they're, if not running away with the East, because the Phillies are also off to a pretty good start, they're going to be there at the end. So we feel three teams pretty much as you can after essentially a month, making their reservations already, with the understanding that, how many times can I say, a long way to go, and somebody will win the Central. We'll just leave that there. So that means if what we're looking at is this a playoff team, it could be. It could also not be. There's nothing about this team right now that suggests it's at the Braves or Dodgers level, despite playing both of those teams very well. But there's nothing that suggests they're not capable of playing at something approaching that next level. And again, we live in a world where that gets you somewhere. And even if it doesn't get you to October, it gets you to a compelling season. And that would be fun. That would be nice. When this team wins, it has been pretty compelling. Maybe every team is like that, but I feel it more this April than I did last April. You might not even remember anymore that in 2023, the Mets actually got off to a pretty good start. They were 14-7 at their peak, and we had no idea, inklings aside, of what was to come. This team, when it wins, it feels like it's doing good, exciting Mets baseball things. That coming from behind, that I don't love the word because it's, I think, overused, but that resilient type of play, the not giving up, not that you're supposed to give up. So when they win, it doesn't feel unusual. But also when they lose, it also doesn't feel unusual. And maybe that's my typically non-concise way of coming back to what you said. Yeah, a 500 team, but I think they have the capability to go one way or the other, and I hope it's in an up direction.
They certainly have the capability of hitting more than they are. The four veteran Mets are not doing so, despite the presence of two hitting coaches, Nimmo, Lindor, Pete, and McNeil, not hitting as well as they can. And yet they are one above 500. I think they definitely miss Francisco Alvarez, and I think they probably miss Ronnie Mauricio, although you can't miss what you don't have. But I think he'd be a good player on this team. They're certainly not hitting the way they can, and they're certainly pitching at least mediocre. That's the level. And the starters, despite what we saw yesterday, we're taping this on Monday, have not been going deep into games. Quintana went 8 innings yesterday. On Sunday, Pitt gave up one run. And in 2024 baseball, that's considered to be incredible. And yet, the Mets bullpen has not been, Mets bullpen has been fine, but they're working too hard. And that may have contributed to the injuries to Smith and Raley. This team appears to be 500-ish, but it can get better.
And by the way, having lived through enough seasons where 500 was clearly aspirational, it's not the worst thing in the world to spend your summer with a team that wins more than it loses. And if at some point you learn that they're not going to make the playoffs, well, that's just life. But, are they capable of hanging in games or hanging in enough games and keeping you interested, keeping you engaged? I think they are. The bullpen is kind of interesting to me because they haven't really had the opportunity to use it the way we probably thought it would be used, which is to say, some combination of Ottavino and Raley when he's healthy, setting up Diaz for the save. Diaz has four saves. He hasn't blown any, he just hasn't had the opportunity to get saves. There just haven't been that many ninth inning leads of three runs or less where you're going to call on your closer. So they have had to make up at the beginning of games, or at least early in games, for pitchers who don't last long. I mean, Quintana going 8 innings, no joke. It was a godsend. Not just, oh, because it saves the bullpen and we don't have to shuttle in guys you're not all that confident in, but just because it was just so good to see. It was just good to see him left in the game. I think this is one of the first real Carlos Mendoza moments we've had to, make one of those judgments we as fans make, like what kind of manager is this? And if you were watching the game on SNY on Sunday, you sort of took it on faith. Gary Cohen was certain of it. Keith Hernandez was certain of it. And in your gut, then you didn't need to go that deep into your gut. You were certain of it. That, okay, he's coming out after 7 2/3. You were sort of, I know I was, surprised that he had lasted 7 innings, let alone into the eighth. Had a rough first inning in which he didn't give up any runs, only gave up one run thereafter. And then because he says, you know what, I'm still good, I can get the next batter, even though there's a righty lefty thing going on, Mendoza says, okay. It's like, oh my God, you can do that. Managers can do that. Mendoza is allowed to do that. Well, I guess he is, and I guess he had faith in his pitcher. And we're probably still haunted. I'm sure it's happened since November 1st, 2015, but we're still haunted by the last time we automatically remember a pitcher convincing a manager, "Don't take me out late in the game." I'm talking about Matt Harvey and Terry Collins in Game 5 of the World Series. This wasn't that. And in fact, it wasn't as anywhere near as big a game. But, Quintana, to channel Keith Hernandez, he's a veteran, folks. Just have a lot of confidence in that guy. Sometimes I know he doesn't reward that confidence, but when he's on, he's on. And I like those sorts of pitchers. And I like that Mendoza appreciated the human being on the mound rather than whatever it is he is sent by the analytics folks. And I don't want to construct a straw man here. I'm sure Mendoza being, young and modern goes along with a lot of what we perceive front offices to be now. He wouldn't have been hired if he weren't in sync with what we perceive David Stearns to be implementing. And what isn't really all that unusual today. Let's not pretend, they're rebels at the gates or whatever. This is how baseball is done. We've seen it for years. On Sunday, it was done a little differently. And just once the game was over, it's a game the Mets won in walk-off fashion that didn't seem possible in the early innings or even in the late innings at some point. One of the things that delighted me was thinking we only used three pitchers. We used Quintana for 8, Diaz in the 9th, and then revelatory Reed Garrett in the 10th and 11th. What a revelation Reed Garrett has been. Even the one run he gave up in the Fakakta extra inning scheme didn't seem his fault. So, you don't have to navigate choppy waters every single day and try to get somebody in the 5th and get through 3 batters and somebody else who was at Syracuse, 24 hours ago for the 6th and then somebody else for the 7th. It was just a nice way to conduct business. And the Mets made it pay off. The Cardinals certainly helped. They are no longer managed by the late Whitey Herzog or by Tony La Russa. They are not, quite in that, what is it? They call it the Cardinal way. The Cardinal way has gone a little awry. That's their problem. I tell you what, it felt wrong to think that we were about to be swept by that team. Not because, blood rivalry, Mets and Cardinals, anything like that. Just, okay, we played a crummy game on Friday. We played a crummy game on Saturday, despite the what felt like window dressing late in the game. We didn't feel crummy on Sunday. We should have gotten something for our troubles. Baseball doesn't always work that way, but hey, you turned around. Mark Vientos was in the game. Quintana had gone 8. Lindor, who has let us down quite a few times this year, did not let us down. He'd homered earlier. Guys like Harrison Bader getting a big hit. Guys like Tyrone Taylor coming through with an important ground ball that I almost forgot about a few minutes after it was over. You start to just feel things happening in a given game where you want to say, hey, you know what? I try to stay away from we deserve to win. We deserve to win that one. And I know it's only one game. We're sitting here talking about one game, but that maybe by the time people are listening to this, it will have been more than forgotten. But there are just games in the course of a season where you just kind of sit back and you just feel so satisfied about it. And this, more than any game thus far this season, was one of those games. And I think I'd like to think it snapped the Mets out of whatever's been bogging them down since they had looked so good the first couple of games in LA and that series against Pittsburgh and generally against Kansas City. Again, yeah, the roller coaster. It has been up and down. And we'd like it to just kind of keep climbing up and to not have some horrible plummet.
I like your line on in Monday's Faith and Fear when you said we've had managers who manage by PDF, as if it was a piece of paper that or a printout that said you have to remove him after X number of pitches. I think we had a manager that did that. and it drove us crazy. So that showed great flexibility. Nice job by Carlos Mendoza.
Yeah, I would have said managed by the book, but I don't think they bother printing out all that many pages these days. Probably a PDF, maybe it's some other kind of file.
Is there any other feeling in baseball akin to what happened after Harrison Bader's single? I'm not talking about the walk-off a few minutes later, but the Mets were down to their last strike. And if you're at the game, you're thinking, oh, I spent all this time here. They get swept. If you're home, you're thinking, I just watched all this game on a Sunday. They get swept. If you're at the game, you're thinking of, do I have all my belongings? Is there going to be traffic getting out of here? And then Bader singles, and you're still there. And you know how long you're going to be there. But it's such a nice feeling because you thought it was over, and you're still there. Is there anything else like it in baseball?
In baseball, probably not. That sense of the abyss and being pulled back from it is very rewarding. And the idea that you're sort of convinced, even though you got to believe you're sort of convinced you're going to lose, and now all bets are off. I had referenced in Monday's column that feeling I had during what became known as the Grand Slam single game, which was, a game that had gone on and on and on into the 15th inning, tied at two. And finally, after every pitcher in creation, even Kenny Rogers had been heroic, finally the Braves put a run on the board. And it's just dawning on me that, and again, to echo what I said about the 2015 World Series, a lot bigger stakes that day. Oh my God, we could lose this game. Oh my God, the series could be over. Oh my God, the season could be over. It hadn't really occurred to me, given, we'd gotten off to a 2-0 lead that day and we'd hung in there, Masato Yoshi versus Greg Maddux, and we had hung in there for so many innings with so many relievers. And once it got tied up, once, Bobby Cox was down to Kevin McGlinchey, and we were able to, manufacture one run before Ventura steps up, it's like, we've been delivered from the afterlife. We're back on Earth and anything is possible. And even though Rob Manfred has sort of ruined extra innings or has been determined to ruin extra innings with the runner on second, which makes everything feel artificial, you're still grateful to be back in the game from 2-1 down to 2-2 all. And anything could happen after that. A little piece of me was thinking, I'm beginning to enjoy this game. Just keep it going, guys. If the Cardinals want to keep using the same pitcher, feel free. But I wasn't ready to pack up my stuff. I was on my couch, but I wasn't ready to pack up my stuff. But when Mark Vientos comes through and hits the 2-run homer, I'm not saying let's play a 12th inning. Pretty happy with that. So you'll love the final score, but you also love the getting to the final score on a day like that.
And one thing to watch with the Mets is how much rope they give Adrian Hauser. Because in Hauser's five starts this season, he's given up at least five runs three times. And that was an acquisition that Stearns made. Stearns has a history with Hauser. The Mets traded for Hauser along with Tyrone Taylor. We'll see how much time Hauser gets in the rotation. I think they're waiting for Christian Scott to get a few more starts at Syracuse. We talked about Christian Scott during Grapefruit League Town and spring training. That would be exciting. Right now, Hauser is still in the rotation, but that's something to keep an eye on.
Well, anybody who has an astronomical ERA is somebody to keep an eye on in terms of a change being made. Listen, Hauser, professional pitcher. I keep thinking about those, was five perfect innings, five plus perfect innings to start the season, his first outing. And you're thinking, this is great. I wasn't expecting, anything in particular out of Adrian Hauser. And feels like it's been all downhill ever since. Do you have a better option at this very moment? You off him right away for Christian Scott? Not necessarily, I don't think. Pitchers have been known to have better Mays than Aprils, so let's put it that way. We'll see what he's got. And we're always going to look forward to the next guy. And Sooner or later, Tyler McGill, I know that makes you happy, is coming back. David Peterson seems to be coming back. And knock wood, Kodai Senga is coming back. So suddenly you'll have options in addition to guys who you weren't expecting to bring up to the big leagues at this point of the season. Scott continues to make the case for himself and Hauser does not. You work with that and you don't wait forever. But, I don't know what the outside is anymore. You give it a month, you give it till Memorial Day, give it to the 4th of July. Everybody's an individual. Hopefully somebody among the pitching coaches, plural. I know, I guess there's just one pitching coach and one or two bullpen coaches. I've lost track. Somebody's working with Hauser. Hauser, I'm sure, is working hard himself. He doesn't want to have outings like he had most recently. So don't want to give up on anybody just yet. But it is fun to think about the guys who you're bringing along, like Scott, and to think that maybe he'll be here a little sooner than expected, and maybe it will be for the best. But you've got a rotation. I'm okay going with it at least another round.
Let me hit the pause button for a moment. During the following conversation, Greg and I talk about the next time the Mets wear the City Connect uniforms, and we assumed that it would be on a Saturday because that's what the Mets said. It would be on all future Saturday home games except the day that they honor Daryl Strawberry. Well, 2 minutes after we concluded the conversation and said goodbye, I saw that the Mets announced that they would be wearing it on Monday night because Luis Severino, as the starting pitcher, asked for it. We didn't know that was a rule. That's why we said what we said. It's going to sound wrong when you hear this conversation, but it was correct when we said it. Anyway, back to the show. There's a saying, two things can be true at the same time. Saturday's game against St. Louis, the Mets did not look good. They lost the game. But Greg, did the Mets look good? It was the debut of the City Connect uniforms. I offered my initial opinion on the City Connect uniforms in our previous episode. You wanted to wait till you saw them on the field. What'd you think?
Well, I thought it was appropriate that it was drab gray skies because it seemed to work pretty well against that backdrop. Some sunny day, it'll be interesting to see what the Mets look like. The reason I didn't want to just kind of pass judgment on fashion points is they're not really your team's uniform until they're wearing them in a game. And suddenly the team you think of as yours and the identity that you have assumed in step with them for your entire life, assuming it's a team that hasn't made massive changes to its wardrobe, and the Mets from 1962 forward have had a pretty consistent look. Certainly consistent colors. They may have augmented along the way, but we know what the Mets look like. We don't even have to think about it. Suddenly, you're looking at a whole other thing. Not necessarily a bad thing, not necessarily a great thing. Just those are the Mets out there, and they're wearing these. So they had come out of the dugout with absolutely no warning that this is what they looked like. I suppose I would have fainted. But we knew these were coming. You were able, to say a couple of things about them in advance. What I was looking at, you want to tell me it's stylish? I'll believe in you. I'll believe it's stylish. It's got, nice palettes, whatever. We've heard the storytelling aspects of it, which is, how you get City Connects. They don't just, come on a hanger. You have to hear a whole thing about, why this represents the city in which a team is playing. We've been spectators to this for, however many teams have come before us in this program, and, there are more to come. The Tampa Bay Rays jumped in today, and there'll be others. Do I feel I'm looking at the Mets when I'm looking at NYC? And I'm looking at a cap with the bridge on it and the purple trimming on the gray and the pinstripes that aren't pinstripes because they're diamonds and circles like the Express and the Local and all of that. For nine Saturdays, I believe that's how often they're slated to wear them. Sure, that's what the Mets are now. I mean, listen, I'm not watching it now because they're not playing, but I watch a lot of Brooklyn Nets basketball. in the course of a season. And the NBA is very big on this sort of thing. This is your statement uniform. This is your whatever uniform. And it's gotten to the point where when the Nets wear just their regular uniforms, it's almost a letdown because, oh, what's wrong? Are there others in the wash? Listen, you had said in the last episode that, you know, where are the Mets in this? Where's the orange? Where's the blue? Listen, I've got lots of orange and blue in my closet. We all do. We've seen the Mets in orange and blue. They sell lots of things with orange and blue in. I'm okay with that. Which itself took some doing, or at least being worn down by what MLB has done. I think the first team to do City Connects was the Red Sox in 2021. Now, if you are familiar with the name Red Sox, you know that red is intrinsic to their identity. And there's no red in the Boston City Connects. And if for so long I would stare at them, and I would just, and I don't care, I'm not a Red Sox fan, but I was almost pleading, please just put a little drop of red somewhere. You know, maybe not a bloody sock, but somewhere on the Boston Red Sox uniform, City Connects. You know, I know, yeah, and I knew the story. Oh, it's the colors of the marathon and whatever other excuses they made up, city flag, I don't know. It looked weird. Now I see it. It's like, okay, that's something they wear. It's something the Red Sox wear. And I can live with this being something the Mets wear X number of times a year. I appreciate the idea purple is the seven train and that sort of thing. That New York has lots of concrete. Who knew? Who knew that New York owns sidewalks that no other city has, if that's one of the excuses? That stuff's all good. I think the one thing, and I think we're all Monday morning fashion quarterbacks when something like this comes out, and that's fine. And I didn't really think of it ahead of time. I spent most of the build up to this before they unveiled them ahead of them actually wearing them. Kind of fearing the worst. So that's all I could picture was how bad is this going to be? And then it's not that bad. But the one thing I would do differently now that I've had a little time to think about it, I would replace one letter on that jersey. I would not wear NYC. I would wear NYM. You know what NYM is when you see it. When I see it, I know what it is. By now, the way baseball is abbreviated, we know what NYM means. There was a time that would have just been NYN in parentheses or NL, unfortunately, except at National League Town. Those days are gone. But I like the, I put it this way, I find it a little desperate, the NYC. Much like I always find a little desperate the way the Mets try to convince you. And by you, I mean somebody who might be susceptible to their advertising for merchandise, apparel, whatever. Every now and then they'll come out with some promotion or commercials that say, look, that basically say, look at everybody wearing Mets caps on the streets of New York. I think they had a day for that. It rained like crazy just before the 2023 season. It's Mets Day in New York or whatever they call it. Amazing day. Everybody wearing a Mets cap. Everybody wears Mets cap. Here's a video pretending that everybody walks around wearing Mets caps. Ironically, the day that they unveiled the City Connects, not when they played, but when they unveiled them, I was in Manhattan. I saw like two Mets caps. I don't want to tell you how many Yankees caps I saw. And again, probably tourists. In fact, I know they were tourists. I found myself in a tourist area. And that's, you know, that's life. There's something inauthentic to me almost, even though, yes, the Mets have every claim as much as any other institution of being part of the city of New York. The inauthentic thing I find about NYC as a rallying cry or a flag or whatever is, I guess I think back to my father when I was, I think, 8 years old, and I said something about, hey, Dad, how come we don't go into New York City more or something like that? And he said, don't call it New York City. It's New York. Tourists call it New York City. And maybe that's, you know, that's my dad. And maybe that's, you know, my own hang up. But really, when you think about it, New York City is something that people who come from somewhere else call New York. So, yeah, the city, New York, It's a big palette, a big canvas, and the Mets have every right to draw on it as they saw fit. And that's, it's okay. But here, I worked up, it's very bare bones. I didn't flesh it out. But if I were thinking it through, this is what I would have started with. So despite my voice not being tip top, it's very brief, give you an idea of what I can hear an announcer. Maybe you'd hire some young hip person, somebody who hopefully has some sort of Met connection or just sounds good talking. So forgive my voice. This is what I just would think would be a good launching point. And mind you, anytime you see something and you have a different idea, it seems great. So I'm not saying this is the best idea. It's just what I thought of. New York, the metropolis, biggest city in the country, most mammoth metropolitan area, too. We've got boroughs. We've got the longest of islands. We encompass three states. The beautiful part of being from here, moving to here, or simply loving it here is how much you get to choose from here. The best food, according to you. The fashion you decide looks best on you. The field that is indisputably your field. You decide who you want to be and what you want to be about. You are an individual among millions. Yet just because you don't go along with the crowd doesn't mean you're all alone here. In the New York metropolitan area, you've got neighbors. You've got community. You've got teammates. The passion belongs to you and you and you. There's nothing quite like knowing you're in this thing together and that your team isn't only your team. And now we have various individuals saying, my team, my team, my team. You connect with your team, your teammates, and the entire metropolitan area. If you happen to be in a hurry, you are, after all, in and around New York, you can express that feeling in three quick letters. NYM, our home, our team. Just let somebody try to tell you different. And you can fill in the video in your mind. And I'm sure that there's more to be said or more to visualize. It's just an idea. And if the Mets had come out, even in the same font, wearing jerseys and even in the same colors, it's at NYM, I would have felt like it's not just something being sold to me. I would have felt like, yeah, you're talking to me. You're talking to us, talking to Mets fans, because who is going to be interested in buying whatever this is at whatever price this is going to be? Who is going to be interested in buying a jersey or a t-shirt or whatever? Putting aside the caps and the wacky batting helmets with the bridge coming out of it. You're either going to have Mets fans who will not need much of an excuse to want to embrace something Mets, or you'll have people who don't really care and maybe it'll get their attention. I don't know how many of those people there are who would say, ooh, look at that. I really got to have that. Maybe it gets worn in some sort of contemporary culture type of thing and people are excited and it catches on. Maybe that'll happen with NYC. But I think you kind of want to talk to Mets fans. I rewatched the hype video, which again is what I was sort of scripting in my mind, something like that. And it's swell to say, hey, New Yorkers love pizza and coffee in a Greek cup from an Egyptian guy that's from Colombia, that sort of thing. Doesn't really feel like it has anything to do with the Mets. Less so even than what you were talking about with, where's the orange, where's the blue, where are the colors? I like the idea that, the Mets stand for all of us. So we're not all generic New Yorkers, and that, a lot of us we consider ourselves New Yorkers, but we live outside the city. I know it's called City Connects, but cities have bridges and tunnels. And, it reaches to a lot of us, and even those of us who are not in the five boroughs, feel that connection. So that's my thought. The next time they wear them, which I guess will be the next Saturday home game, I'll see them, I'll be used to them, and I'll say, swell. And probably by the end of the season, it'll just feel, if not second nature, then third nature at least. And just like you get used to everything after a while, it doesn't feel like one of those things I'm going to stare at and say, oh my God, that's not the Mets, or oh my God, that's just horrible. It could have always been better. It could have always been worse. So, yeah, I think it was appropriate that it was kind of a gray day. I'm sorry they couldn't kick it off with a win. May they have better luck next time. So that's My inflation being what it is, that's my 50 cents, not my 2 cents, on City Connects and the Mets.
Your hype video makes me want to run through a wall. I'm glad to hear you agree to extent with my point about them not being Mets uniforms. I think the Mets are trying to take advantage of the Yankees feeling like they're above the whole thing because the Yankees won't have City Connects. So the Mets are going to have the only ones in New York City. And that's why it says NYC, at least for the next 3 years. Then they get to redesign them again. I just wish that they did what the White Sox and Cubs did. The Cubs one says Wrigleyville. The White Sox one says Southside because there are two teams there. And that's why these are different than the one City Connect teams. So I think I agree with you on that. I don't mind them. I just wish they were more of the Mets, but we look forward to seeing them getting their first win with them the next Saturday home game.
Indeed. Chicago, I think, has a more defined dichotomy, and I think that's why Southside and Wrigleyville work for them respectively. I don't mind being a little more expansive. I mean, I sort of expected, or at least figured it was being considered, that they would wear something alluding to Queens or probably not Flushing, but something like that. Then I get the feeling maybe you're seeding the other four boroughs, at least in theory. What I like the idea of leaning into not so much, hey everybody, it's not the Yankees, but leaning into the idea that we're out here, we're all out here. We may not be, there are a lot of us. It's not all of us, but nobody's going to tell us we're not entitled to be this way, to love this team. And we're running through a wall, don't hurt yourself, but something to stoke the Met heart and the Met spirit, more so than I always buy whatever the Mets wear, therefore I'm going to buy this. And again, if I think a lot of this is driven, not just in a broad sense by merchandising opportunities. They like selling these things overseas. New York means something overseas. I can see why you'd want to get an NY in there. I don't think it would be that hard in a place, like Tokyo, to if you saw NYM. I don't think people would pass on it. I know that that's actually something the Mets have considered in recent times. Can we sell things in Japan? They got a very good pitcher from Japan, so there's probably a following there. But they decided to roll how they decided to roll. In some ways, it was bold. In some ways, it was safe. And now they're wearing them. And like you said, for 3 years, see how they look in them. Look, if the Mets had a better idea for City Connects, I would have liked to have seen it. If anybody has a better idea for the Mets, I'd like to hear it. If anybody has a brilliant idea, I'd love to hear it. Jeff, do you think you can help me out?
I shall, because now it's time for the return of a beloved segment on NLT called Jeff's Brilliant Ideas. It's so popular that Christopher Nolan is considering a 3-hour movie about the creation of Jeff's Brilliant Ideas and how tortured I am before I present these ideas to the world. I'm hoping that Jake Gyllenhaal plays me, but some have suggested Carrot Top. Many of you are saying it's not possible for one person to have so many brilliant ideas, but it is. It's time for season three of Jeff's Brilliant Ideas. MLB Rule 505(a)(6) states that when there is a fair ball that touches the ground and then bounces into the stands or passes through, over, or under a fence, scoreboard, shrubbery, or vines on the fence, the runner shall be entitled to advance 2 bases. This also applies if a fielder deflects a ball into the stands. We know this rule as a ground rule double. Everything stops, and it's the most anticlimactic moment in baseball. There's action and then there isn't. But there's one aspect of the rule that should be changed. And frankly, it's so obvious that I'm hesitant to call this idea brilliant, but it's never discussed. A runner on first with two outs will score on a ball hit deep enough to bounce over the fence because the runner is going on contact. But the rule only allows the runner to advance two bases. The rule should reflect that fact, that reality, and not let a lucky bounce affect the outcome. If a runner is on first base with two outs and there is a ground rule double, the runner on first should get three bases and not two. There's no umpire discretion involved. We don't need that. Just the application of common sense. If there's a ground rule double with two outs, the runner on first scores. Let's do it. What do you think, Greg?
I would like to keep the ball in play once it bounces over the fence and do what you said you feel like doing. And they have to run through a wall or over it to go get the ball. Sometimes it does seem at odds with reality that a runner on first on a ball in which he would have surely scored doesn't get to score because it took, as you said, a lucky or unlucky bounce. If it's a Met on first base and he doesn't score, I always feel robbed. And if it's an opponent on first base and he doesn't score, I always feel I have been rescued. So it always feels like, well, we'll split the difference. There's just so many things that baseball has done because baseball has done them that probably could use a fresh look. And that definitely feels like one of them. So brilliant. How about incandescent? It is giving off light. And it is allowing us to take a better look at the situation.
We're recording this on Monday, April 29th. And Greg, this is the second anniversary of one of my favorite episodes of the show, because on this date, 2 years ago, the Mets no-hit the Phillies. And we immediately recorded an episode called Five Arms No Hitting. It was one of our most joyous episodes. So that happened 2 years ago today.
Well, happy anniversary to, let's see if I can remember who they all were. Tylor McGill, Drew Smith, Joely Rodriguez, Seth Lugo, and Edwin Diaz, all caught by James McCann.
Well done, Greg. And by the way, next Monday and Tuesday, I'm going to be in St. Louis. I will be sitting among the greatest fans in baseball, and maybe I'll learn something. Maybe I'll become a better fan. But if you're going to be at either of those games and you want to say hi, please do so. Be like Dave Metz Outsider, who I saw when I went to Denver last year. This isn't a contest. It's not some great honor to sit with me. Some have suggested it's the opposite of an honor. If you are going to be in St. Louis next Monday or Tuesday for the Mets games, write me a note. This is Jeff talking at nationalleaguetown@gmail.com. Monday and Tuesday in St. Louis.
When you say Budweiser, you've said it all. Get ready to hear that jingle. Or if they still do it, that was a while ago. Have fun.
Thank you, Greg, and thank you for listening. We'll be back Thursday with a bonus episode, and then the following Wednesday after I return from St. Louis. So until next time, I'm Jeff Eisen.
I'm Greg Prince.
And as always, let's go Mets! Copyright 2024, music provided by the Royal Arctic Institute. Check them out on Spotify.
Au revoir.